you know, Ross, you guys have gone a couple of weeks now, or at least a couple of weeks since the season ended. How plugged in are you? I would imagine you're as big a fan of the sport as you are somebody who works in the sport. How plugged in are you to these playoffs, and do you plan, Ross, to sit down and watch these games between the Dodgers and Rays?
Yeah, absolutely. I love baseball. I love the competition. I love the entertainment aspect of it. And obviously we have a lot of relationships in the game that, you know, we're following very closely. So I can't get enough of it. It's been, you know, a great playoffs year to watch. I've really enjoyed thinking about what the teams and individuals have had to overcome this year, how unique the year and circumstances are. And it has been a very nice reprieve to watch the competition, and we'll absolutely be plugged in for the World Series.
When you're watching the playoffs, do you ever see anything that you can maybe add to what you're doing with the Jays, or is it purely just on a, you know, and just enjoying the games?
No, I mean, of course there is. I don't watch a game without thinking about how we can learn and get better. And, you know, at the same time, I think it's more over the course of, you know, 10s and 20s and 30 games and watching, as it is to just watching 7 games, but or hundreds of games is where you really start to, you know, see different things that could have an impact or an imprint on you. At the same time, there is a lot to be said for what transpires on the biggest stage at the most intense moments. And year in and year out, there are consistencies that you can take away from playoff teams, and they evolve and it change, but there are things that as we have our daily meetings and talk about our off-season strategy, which we're about halfway through now, the discussion portion, we're talking about that. We talk about the games that we've watched this year. We talk about historically what we've learned from playoff teams and playoff contending teams and how we can continue to improve.
With Ross Atkins, the general manager of the Blue Jays, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm interested, Ross, in your impressions now that you're somewhat removed from it, of this 60-game season plus the two playoff games, and what you anticipate, not just your team, but the sport in general, the 30 franchises taking from the 60-game experience and potentially applying to the 162-game experience. Do you think we are in the process, in the very same way that the shifts with the Tampa Bay Rays in the early days of the Joe Maddon era in Tampa Bay, the shifts really started to take over the game offensively, defensively. Do you think we are in a huge pivot point here with usage of pitching such that usage can apply over a full 162?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's a really broad topic. First and foremost, when I think about and reflect on the 60-game season, and as I briefly mentioned, what the industry and the teams had to take on, and the amount of change, how much we had to adapt, and I can't tell you how I'm just so impressed by our players, the whole industry, as to think about what we've asked of them. And rightfully so, understandably so, in a pandemic, we have asked a lot, and we should have asked a lot to ensure that people were safe beyond the game of baseball. And our players were fantastic. Here we are with 7 games left to play, and there were a lot of people that thought, you know, what the industry was trying to do was going to be very, very difficult. It was. But a true testament to our players and in the game to be so responsible and thoughtful and selfless and just focus on the game and focus on, what they could control. So I think that bodes well for our future. More specifically to your question, what it means to, you know, how you've seen pitching staffs used. It's not just this year. I think over the course of really the last 5 years, as you started to see the bullpen constructions evolve, starting pitchers not going as deep into games. 3 years ago, the concept of an opener coming into play, and they used to just be called bullpen days, and now I think the matchup usage or patterns is something that more and more teams are digging into. The Rays were arguably at the forefront of that, and the Dodgers have always been extremely thoughtful that way, certainly under the leadership of Andrew Friedman, and matchups are huge. So, I think that's probably where the emphasis goes. We'll see how roster construction evolves and, how teams continue to be built. But that's a little bit bold. It is very powerful to have a starting pitcher, three or four starting pitchers that can get you into the seventh or eighth inning. And I don't think there's an executive in the game that would disagree with, if you can have four or five of those, that would be a great way to start in building your roster. It's not the easiest thing to find. So, I think to answer your question as specifically as I can, I think it's more about the actual usage and deployment and putting every single player in the best position to succeed as frequently as you can. And that has created some uncomfortable transitions for players, for fans, for executives, for managers, because it's not the norm when you're constantly doing that. And when you saw it transpire over a 60-game season, we did it more often. I don't think you can do it as often in a 162-game season.
Well, I think there were a couple of factors there, Ross, right? The fact that you really didn't end up with a spring training because there was a 4-month shutdown between when you shut down and when you came back, and it was quick. So that was a factor. Pitchers just simply weren't built up. And the second thing was you had more roster spots available too. And I wonder if that is a direction that perhaps the game could go or should go, in the name of mitigating in particular some of the arm issues that pitchers have, so that you're not going back to back or back to back to back with some of these bullpen guys, so that you can spread it out more if we're going to end up seeing more pitchers used in shorter spurts.
The other factor is that the industry, the Blue Jays, I'll speak for us, we went into playoff mode a month into the season. So for half of our season, we were playing playoff games, and is the way we felt. And so every single game in the month of September was so important for us over that span of 28 games and 27 days, where I believe we were 18-10 and played very well. Yeah, it was extremely stressful, a ton of one-run games. I think we had 11 extra inning games, and every single game we were, we were playing to win tonight, with balancing somewhat that we had to play, of course, for the next whatever the number of games were left. But at the same time, I think we went into playoff mode as an industry pretty quickly there for obvious reasons. But your points are good ones. We'll see. And again, like it will, the game will adapt and we will evolve, and we're always, as an industry, talking about how do we just put a better product on the field for the fans, and how can we do that? What is best for the health and sustainability of our players, and what is best for making sure that our fans love this game and continue to?
We're with the general manager of your Toronto Blue Jays, Ross Atkins. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The payroll gap between the Rays and the Dodgers just seems to be talked about every day on radio and TV and in the media. What do you think of when you see the differences in how the teams have spent their money? And is there any kind of pressure if you have a team with a lower payroll to kind of produce a winner because of what the Rays did this year?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, they're both two incredible teams. They've both done an incredible job with the resources that they have. I would feel confident in saying that neither team is excited about their matchup. They're both very well built, very well constructed. And, you know, I think for your long-term sustainability, if the Rays could choose to have that financial room, they would choose to. So for year in and year out, it's not just payroll, but where you're deploying all of those dollars, whether that be in research, whether that be in staffing and just gathering information year in and year out, you know, how you're, you know, throughout the entire organization of baseball operations, 400 plus people, how you're using all those dollars. Obviously, the biggest lever, as you mentioned, is major league payroll. And does it put pressure? I think the way we, you know, I'll speak for the Blue Jays, the way we're thinking about it is you would like to have, you know, the most room that makes sense for your organization to run a good business and to take your revenue and put it back into that team is, you know, the more revenue you have and the more you can distribute that back into your team and back onto the product on the field, the better. So that's the way we're thinking about that. It's just, you know, how do we improve the organization? I would imagine that's how most teams are thinking about it.
Ross, I'm interested, and I think especially the diehard fans are interested in the notion of projecting a player down the road, because you're not just dealing with this year's payroll, you're dealing with where do we envision ourselves 2 years from now. And I think one of the things that I like the most about the Ryu signing is that it's a four-year contract, and guys like Vladdy and Bo and Cavan or whoever you want to throw into that mix, the young players, they're not going to become, prohibitively is probably not even the right word, but they're not even going to become somewhat expensive in arbitration until around the time Ryu's contract ends. And so you line up a good pitcher now on big money with your young core in their relatively cheap years. When you project, let's use, I don't know if you're comfortable using a particular player as an example, but I'll just throw a name out there. When you project a Bo Bichette, I imagine you factor in age, you know, where you envision the industry going in terms of revenue and what a player like him will cost in arbitration. Do you project like specific, we anticipate he'll be a 270 hitter, he'll be a 340 on base, he'll be a this slugging percentage, we project this number of extra base hits, home runs. Like, how specific do you guys get as you chart out each individual player, not just for next year, but in the coming years?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I feel like you've, with your question, you framed it really well. And so generally, yes, it's amazing that it's the beauty of baseball, right? One of the beautiful things about baseball is how often we play and what history tells us about the future, which you could say about many things in life. And baseball is just another example of that. And if you historically look at players of certain ages, of certain performance levels, of what they've done at different points in their career, and then use that information to project what that means moving forward, it's astonishing how consistent it is. I remember as a young minor league player thinking about, you know, players that I was playing with and against and talking about, yeah, he's going to, using those slash line numbers that you just projected, he's going to hit 280. He's going to have a 350 on base. He's going to have a 440 slug. And he's, you know, this is what he's going to do this year because I just watched him do it for five. And you take that over the course of time and project that out. And it really is. It really is amazing. And then you can also factor in when you think it's going to peak. Having said all that, the most important part of the equation is the person and the human and what we feel that that competitive spirit is going to do an impact what his history suggests will happen. Because history is really important as you think about projecting and thinking about what the most likely outcomes are. But you have to factor in the heart, the drive, the competitiveness, and all of those things. So, as we think about our planning, Scott, you're absolutely right. We have to think about it over the course of much longer than 1 year to do the best thing for our fans, for these players, to give them the best chance and the best runway to do something special, and not just for a year or two, but for a time where this becomes a group of players that our fans remember for a very, very, very long time.
With Ross Atkins, the general manager of the Blue Jays, let's go back to game one of the two games against Tampa Bay and the Matt Shoemaker situation. I thought it was interesting after the game, Charlie Montoyo said, hey, look, the plan initially was probably for two innings out of Shoemaker, but he was so effective, we gave him a third. Those of us sitting back and watching, we're going, man, he was so good through three innings. Why didn't he get a fourth and maybe a fifth? Can you peel the curtain back for us and share with us how you go about planning a game like that with your pitchers? Because you understand and you would have heard that there were differing opinions on the way that game played out in terms of pitching usage.
Right. Yeah, it's so interesting. It really is. So first, if you think about the outcome of that game, that we got to the seventh inning and it was a one-run game, and we would have, whether it was Ryu pitching, Taijuan Walker pitching, Shoemaker alone, Robbie Ray alone, some combination of the two of them is what it ended up being. That's a decent outcome. That's in our view, it's a very good outcome. And we hit some balls hard right at guys. I felt like that game, it's going to happen in baseball. And I'm not saying we were just unlucky, but we hit balls right at guys and they were positioned well, or, it was just sometimes that's the way things go. And we could have been in a very good position that game, and we probably don't have that narrative happening if we just won that game, right? Because that's all that matters. But as we plan, it's back to what I was saying about the Rays and the Dodgers and other teams, and we were talking about matchups. We're trying to put guys in the best position to be successful and be disciplined about it, but then also watch the game. And that's where, obviously – once the game starts, there's no more preparation and there's no more discussion. But building up to any decision that we're making, we want to make sure that our staff has the tools and the information and the resources to make the best decisions to put players in the best possible positions to have success. And as we talked about at the beginning of the call, sometimes it's uncomfortable because it's different and change for players and not the traditional path that has always been taken. But really, if we talk about it this way to players, as you think about the evolution of whether it be matchups, whether it be usage, whether it be decision making, how rosters are built. If you think about, so I'm sure both of you have a backup camera in your car, I would imagine. You, Mike, and you, Scott.
Me, it doesn't really work. I got a 2010 Jeep Laredo, yeah. But Scotty does for sure.
Oh, yeah. In my 08 Accord. You've probably noticed me ripping around the city, Ross. Oh, who's that guy?
Well, you're familiar with what a backup camera is.
Yes, yeah.
And I think if you have a car, you use it because it works a little bit better than the traditional process of wrenching your back around and making sure that, or you use both, right? So as the game evolves and as we grow with information, technology, the uses of cameras, the uses of more and more information that we have, we want to make sure that our staff has all the tools that they need. That's all it is. is making sure that, you know, we learn much more from our staff as it relates to decision making than they will ever learn from us. But at the same time, we want to make sure they have all the information they can possibly have to make the best decisions as they go through a game. And that's all it is. We're making sure that they have those resources.
Well, Ross, you're talking to the objects in mirror are closer than they appear generation. So now, before we let you go, I want to read some bullet points out to you. I've got a scouting report, and I want your feedback on this, and whether there's a spot for an athlete like this on the Toronto Blue Jays, or at least.
Oh my goodness.
With an invite to spring training. 39 years old, turns 40 in January. Former pro athlete turned radio host. A gap-to-gap hitter who played high school baseball at Michael McGivney in Markham, who lives off of a plant-based diet, and who last week went to a batting cage north of the city and hit a 101-mile-an-hour fastball off a pitching machine. If I told you that was Mike Zygomanis, would you at least invite him to Blue Jays fantasy camp if you won't give him a tryout, a non-roster invitee tryout in spring training?
Only if you wear Ziggy on the back of his jersey.
Hey, that's done. That's legally binding, right? Is that an official invite? We heard it.
Legal. I didn't know that was legally binding. I mean, listen, invite. That sounds entertaining for sure.
Oh yeah,
definitely sounds entertaining.
Well, we'll have to show you the vid and see if you like his swing. He did hit 101 mile an hour fastball. Thanks for doing this morning. It's good to hear your voice, and we'll certainly catch up as the offseason goes on.
All right, Scotty. Thanks for having me on. Thanks, Mike. Have a good day.